Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Russia is making plans to hold its biggest war games in nearly 40 years. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu announced the military exercises on Tuesday. He said they will take place next month and also involve the armies of China and Mongolia. The Reuters news agency says the exercises, called Vostok 2018, will take place in Russia's central and eastern military districts. It will involve almost 300,000 troops, over 1,000 military aircraft, and two of Russia's naval fleets, Shoigu said in a statement. The war games are coming at a time of increased tensions between Russia and the West. Russian officials are concerned about what they say is an unjustified buildup of the NATO military alliance along their country's western borders. NATO officials say the alliance strengthened its forces in Europe to stop possible Russian military action after Russia seized Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. They add that the Russian government supported a pro-Russian rebellion in eastern Ukraine. The war games will take place from September 11th to 15th. They are likely to displease Japan, which is already worried about a Russian military buildup in East Asia. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is set to attend a meeting in the Russian city of Vladivostok over the same period. A Japanese foreign ministry official said on Tuesday that Japan is closely watching military cooperation between Russia and China. The Russian defense minister said the war games would be the biggest since 1981. That was 10 years before the collapse of the Soviet Union. When asked if the cost of holding such a massive exercise was justified, a Russian government spokesman said such war games were important. The country's ability to defend itself in the current international situation, which is often aggressive and unfriendly towards our country, means the exercise is justified, the official said. When asked if Chinese involvement meant China and Russia were moving towards an alliance, spokesman Dmitry Peskov said it showed that the two countries were cooperating in all areas. China and Russia have held military exercises together before, but never exercises this large. NATO spokesman Dylan White said that Russia had told the alliance about the planned exercises in May. He said NATO planned to watch it closely. Russia has invited military attachés from NATO countries to observe the war games. White said that offer was under consideration. All nations have the right to exercise their armed forces, he wrote in an email. He added that it is important that exercises be transparent and predictable. I'm Susan Shand.
In a few weeks, Julia Flores Colque will celebrate her 118th birthday. She is the oldest woman in Bolivia. Following the death of a woman in Japan earlier this year, Flores Colque may now be the oldest person in the world. Her national paper says Flores Colque was born on October 26, 1900, in the mountains of Bolivia. During her long life, Flores Colque has seen two world wars. Her home country of Bolivia had a major revolution. And the town where she is from, Sacaba, has grown from 3,000 people to 175,000. But right now, Flores Colque seems mostly interested in her dogs, cats, and rooster. She has not heard of the Guinness Book of World Records, and she does not care if experts confirm she is the oldest person alive. She's always been active, easygoing, and fun, says her grandniece, who lives with her in a simple home with a dirt floor. Government officials have paid for some improvements to the house, adding a brick path and railings so Flores Colque can walk safely. The Sacaba mayor's office calls Flores Colque part of the country's living history. On the day a reporter from the Associated Press visited, Flores Colque was playing a small guitar called the charango and singing old songs in her native language of Quechua. "If you would have told me you were coming, I'd have remembered all the songs," she joked. Then she dipped her finger into a cake and smiled while she licked the frosting. When she was growing up, Flores Colque herded sheep and llamas in the Bolivian highlands. Then she moved to a valley where she sold fruits and vegetables. Those fruits and vegetables became her main food, and she still eats a healthy diet, except for a piece of cake and a glass of soda sometimes. She never married and does not have children. Today, the AP reporter says Flores Colque looks like a stone statue. She cannot hear very well, but she is alert and scolds her small dog when the animal goes into the road. Flores Colque's age would make her interesting anywhere, but it is especially notable in Bolivia. The United Nations says the country has one of South America's highest levels of death.
New opinion studies have found a majority of teachers believe technology is helping them do a better job in the classroom. But the research also shows that many educators are concerned digital devices can cause physical and mental harm to students. One study asked higher education teachers to give their opinions on the use of technology in the classroom. The study involved higher education teachers at public and private colleges and universities across the United States. The 2018 Teaching with Technology Survey was published by the website Campus Technology. Of those questioned, 44% said technology made their job easier, while 29% said it made their job much easier. While overall feelings about technology were good among college educators, an increasing number said technology could also be harmful. A total of 19% of those questioned said they felt technology had made their job harder or much harder. The study also looked at how technology helped teaching effectiveness. A large majority of educators, 87%, said technology had positively affected their ability to teach. 11% said they felt technology had no effect on the quality of their teaching. Just 2% said technology had a negative effect on teaching. Results of the survey also found teachers had good feelings about technology's effects on learning. 83% said they felt technology had positively affected their students' learning. Just 9% said technology did not affect student learning, while 8% said they believed it had a negative effect. In releasing the study results, Campus Technology reported that some teachers had expressed mixed feelings about the use of technology. These opinions came in the form of open-ended questions answered directly by educators. The educators were not identified. One noted that the learning process can suffer if students depend too much on their devices. People can easily get addicted to their devices, and using technology can change the way the brain develops, not always in a good way, the teacher wrote. Another educator wrote, "Technology is accidentally increasing students' weakness in reading and figuring things out, or critical thinking. They confuse clicking with learning." Another expressed that while technology had improved learning in some areas, it had also created a false sense of security in others. The teacher said more research should be done on how the use of technology compares to traditional teaching methods. For example, several recent studies have shown that taking notes with pen and paper improves student learning over taking notes on a laptop, the educator wrote. For some students, the laptop is necessary. For the majority, it's a detriment to their learning. Research organization Gallup published a study earlier this year on the use of digital devices by students in grades K through 12. In that study, 42% of teachers said the effects of devices on students' education was mostly helpful. About 30% of educators said they were neither helpful nor harmful to students. However, 28% said they thought the use of such devices was mostly harmful. Earlier research has shown that a large majority of students at all age levels own a smartphone. An estimated 53% of elementary school students have their own digital devices. About 65% of middle school students are thought to own them, along with at least 82% of high school students. The Gallup study also asked teachers to give their opinions on the possible harmful effects of digital device usage. About 55% of K through 12 teachers said the effects of digital devices on students' physical health are mostly harmful. 42% said they felt the devices are neither helpful nor harmful. And about 69% of teachers said they feel digital devices are mostly harmful to students' mental health. Parents were mostly more supportive than teachers of digital devices and their effects on school-age children. The Gallup study found that 87% of parents believe such devices are mostly helpful, while 13% said they are mostly hurtful. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Embers. Ronald Reagan was finishing his second term. He was America's 40th president and one of the most popular. During his 8 years in office, many Americans did well financially. Many felt more secure about the future of the nation and the world. The possibility of nuclear war with the Soviet Union did not seem as great a threat as it had in the past. The Constitution limits presidents to 2 terms. So in 1988, the country prepared to elect a new chief executive. There were 3 main candidates for the Republican Party nomination. They were George Herbert Walker Bush, Bob Dole, and Pat Robertson. Bush had just served 8 years as Reagan's vice president. Dole was the top Republican in the Senate. Robertson was a conservative Christian who had his own television program. Ronald Reagan's popularity helped George Bush gain the Republican nomination. Neither Dole nor Robertson won enough votes in the primary election season to be a threat. Bush was nominated on the first vote at the party convention. The delegates accepted his choice for Vice President Senator Dan Quayle of Indiana. 8 candidates competed for the nomination of the Democratic Party. One of the candidates was Jesse Jackson, a black minister and political activist. He won about 25% of the delegates. He had also sought the nomination 4 years earlier. The Democrats chose Michael Dukakis, the governor of Massachusetts. His running mate was Senator Lloyd Benson of Texas. In public opinion surveys, Dukakis looked like a strong candidate after the party conventions. But then he began to lose popularity. Many observers said he had waited too long to launch a nationwide campaign. The candidates heavily attacked each other through campaign advertising on television. Dukakis came under attack from the Bush campaign, targeting his record as governor. Campaign ads said Dukakis had not been tough enough with criminals.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Ads by the Bush campaign also said Dukakis would weaken America's military power. And they accused him of not protecting the environment by seeking a permit to dump sewage from Massachusetts off the coast of New Jersey.
The Environmental Protection Agency called Boston Harbor one of the dirtiest harbors in America. But not long ago, Governor Dukakis proposed a way to help clean it up by dumping Massachusetts sewage sludge off the New Jersey shore, just 106 miles from New York. Now Michael Dukakis says he wants to do for America what he's done for Massachusetts. New Jersey can't afford to take that risk.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life.
Dukakis fought back.
George Bush's negative TV ads, distorting my record. Full of lies, and he knows it.
Dukakis accused Bush of not telling the truth about his part in the secret sales of arms to Iran to finance Contra rebels in Nicaragua. He also criticized Bush for being part of an administration that reduced social programs.
I must have been living through a different 8 years than the one that the vice president's been living through, because this administration has cut and slashed and cut and slashed programs for children, for nutrition, for the kinds of things that can help these youngsters to live better lives. Has cut federal aid to education, has cut Pell Grants and loans to close the door to college opportunity on youngsters all over this country. And that, too, is a major difference between the vice president and me.
In the end, Bush's campaign succeeded in making Dukakis look weak on crime and defense. Dukakis did not help himself with a commercial in which he was looking out of a moving tank while wearing a large helmet. Many people made fun of the ad. On Election Day in November, Bush defeated Dukakis by almost 7 million votes. George Bush was sworn into office on January 20th, 1989.
No president, no government can teach us to remember what is best in what we are. But if the man you have chosen to lead this government can help make a difference, if he can celebrate the quieter, deeper successes that are made not of gold and silk, but of better hearts and finer souls, if he can do these things, then he must. We as a people have such a purpose today. It is to make kinder the face of the nation and gentler the face of the world. My friends, we have work to do.
George Bush was the son of a United States senator and had led a life of public service. He joined the Navy when America entered World War II. He flew attack planes. He was just 18 years old, at that time the youngest pilot the Navy ever had. He flew many bombing raids against the Japanese in the Pacific. He was shot down once and rescued by an American submarine. George Bush came home from the war as a hero. He became a university student and got married. He and his wife, Barbara, then moved to Texas, where he worked in the oil business. He ran for the United States Senate in 1964 and lost. 2 years later, he was elected to the House of Representatives. He ran for the Senate again in 1970 and lost again. But by that time, he had gained wider recognition. Over the next 8 years, he was appointed to a series of government positions. He was ambassador to the United Nations. He was chairman of the Republican National Committee. He was America's representative in China before the two countries had diplomatic relations. And he was head of the Central Intelligence Agency. In 1980, Bush ran against Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination for president. Bush lost, but became Reagan's running mate. After two terms as vice president, he felt ready to lead the nation himself. The new president took 7 foreign trips during his first year in office. In Europe, Bush met with the other leaders of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He proposed a major agreement on reducing troops and non-nuclear weapons in Europe. The Soviet Union considered his proposal an important step in the right direction. In June of 1989, the Chinese government sent tanks and troops to crush pro-democracy protests in Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Hundreds and perhaps thousands of demonstrators were killed. President Bush took some steps against China, but many critics felt the sanctions were not strong enough. In Central and Eastern Europe, communist governments also faced protests. Since 1987, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev had let countries in the Warsaw Pact experiment with political and economic reforms. But those reforms were not enough to stop the fall of communist governments in one country after another. In the summer of 1989, President Bush visited Hungary and Poland. Both nations were trying to develop free market economies. Both were suffering as they moved away from central control.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
In Poland, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union, Lech Wałęsa, led the push for reform. He would later become president of a democratic Poland.
Hier ist das Erste Deutsche Fernsehen mit der Tagesschau.
November of 1989 brought a dramatic expression of the changes taking place in Eastern Europe.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
On November 9th, East Germany opened the wall that had divided it from the West since 1961.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, reporting tonight from Berlin.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go. Thousands and thousands of West Germans come to make the point that the wall has suddenly become irrelevant. Something, as you can see, almost a party on. How do you measure such an astonishing moment in history? The East German government said tonight they were going to make more openings in the wall, at least a dozen more, put bulldozers right through the wall so that more people could cross to the West. The East German communist leadership tonight said there'd be a new election law guaranteeing secret elections which the rest of the world could monitor. And only 24 hours after East Germans were told they could go anywhere, anytime, the Soviet Union said, that was a sensible move.
Within days, citizens and soldiers began tearing down the wall as the world watched with hope for a new era of peace.
Sam, what's it feel like to be standing on top of the wall?
Incredible for me. It's I can't describe really my feelings. It's something unreal for me.
If there is someone who sleeps for 8 weeks and you told him what happened here, he thinks you're crazy. It's unthinkable. Put my number.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.